Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the UFO Movies Limited Q3 and 9M FY 2026 earnings conference call hosted by Ventura Securities Limited. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on a touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. Before we begin, I would like to point out that this conference call may contain forward-looking statements about the company, which are based on belief, opinions, and expectations of the company as on date of this call. These statements do not guarantee the future performance of the company, and it may involve risks and uncertainties that are difficult to predict. I would now like to hand over the call to Mr. Tushar from Ventura Securities. Thank you, and over to you, Tushar.
Thank you. Good day, ladies and gentlemen. On behalf of Ventura Securities Limited, I welcome you all to UFO Movies India Limited Q3 and 9M FY 2026 earnings conference call. The company is represented by Mr. Rajesh Mishra, Executive Director and Group CEO, Mr. Ashish Malushre, Chief Financial Officer, and Mr. Siddharth Bharadwaj, CEO, Digital Cinema Network Business of the company. I would now like to hand over the call to Mr. Mishra for his opening remarks, post which we can start Q&A session. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you, Tushar. Greetings, everyone, and thank you all for joining our Q3 and 9M FY 2026 earnings call. Q3 FY 2026 once again highlighted how critical the right content and release timing are for theatrical performance. October saw steady momentum led by the strong performance of Kantara Chapter One, while other releases such as Sunny Sanskari Ki Tulsi Kumari, Thamma, and Ek Deewane Ki Deewani delivered mixed results. November was relatively softer, reflecting a muted post-Diwali phase. Films like De De Pyar De, Tere Ishq Mein, and 120 Bahadur saw steady but moderate footfalls, while a crowded slate of mid-scale and regional releases delivered average performances overall. December clearly stood out and drove the quarter. Dhurandhar delivered a strong and sustained run through the holiday period, reinforcing the power of event-led cinema, while Akhanda 2: Thandavam added regional support and Tu Meri Main Tera, Main Teri Tu Meri underperformed. Overall, momentum improved meaningfully towards the year-end. Overall, Q3 FY 2026 saw stable footfalls, supported by select market. With a stronger content pipeline ahead, improving advertiser sentiment due to the success of Dhurandhar, and continued focus on efficiencies, we are well positioned to drive consistent performance and growth in the coming quarters. We have strengthened our in-cinema advertising leadership by exclusively adding Mirage's cinema network, expanding our reach to over 3,900 screens, including 2,500+ multiplex screens without incremental CapEx. This meaningfully enhances our Tier 1 and Tier 2 market presence and premium inventory. In total, 457 movies were released, including virgin languages, during the quarter, compared to 404 in Q3 FY 2025 and 462 in Q2 FY 2026. On the screen network front, our advertising footprint now stands at 3,783 screens. This includes 2,304 multiplex screens and 1,479 single screens. Turning to the key figures for the quarter and 9M ended December 2025, the consolidated revenue for Q3 FY 2026 stood at 1,319 million compared to 1,387 million in Q3 FY 2025 and 1,113 million compared to Q2 FY 2026. EBITDA stood at 106 million in Q3 FY 2026 compared to 208 million in Q3 FY 2025 and 116 million compared to Q2 FY 2026. The company reported a net profit of 64 million in Q3 FY 2026 compared to a net profit of 153 million in Q3 FY 2025 and a net profit of 75 million in Q2 FY 2026. Regarding 9M year-ended performance, consolidated revenues amounted to 3,522 million compared to 3,300 million in 9 months FY25. EBITDA for 9 months FY26 was 620 million compared to 473 million in 9 months FY25. On the PAT front, the company reported a net profit 204 million in 9 months FY26 against a total net loss of 103 million in 9 months FY25. The consolidated cash as of 31st December was 1,271 million, and the net cash was 491 million after considering outstanding debt. Looking ahead, the Q4 began on a positive note with the release of films such as Ikkis, Raja Saab, Rahu Ketu, Border 2, etc. The outlook for the upcoming quarter remains positive with several high-profile releases including Mardani 3, O Romeo, Dhurandhar Part 2, Toxic Paddy, etc. With this robust lineup, we remain confident about continuing with the momentum. I would like to take this opportunity to thank all our stakeholders for their continued trust in the company. With that, I open the floor to take your questions. My colleagues, Mr. Ashish Maluste, Chief Financial Officer, and Mr. Siddharth Bharadwaj, CEO, and I will be happy to take your questions. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin the question and answer session. If you have a question, please press star and one on a telephone keypad and wait for your turn to ask the question. If you would like to withdraw your request, you may do so by pressing star and one again. We'll wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. We request the participants to restrict to two questions in the initial round and join back the queue for more questions. Now, the first question from the line of Shilpa Sabu from Ananta Capital. Please go ahead.
Thank you for taking my question. My question is to the CEO. So the company has good cash, approximately 100 crore on books, and with low working capital requirement and capex requirement, we have an asset-light model, right? So if the company does buyback from open market, the ROE, EPS for the investors can be improved, because huge wealth has been destroyed in the past. Along with that, we have sufficient capex cash flows available. So what is your take on the same?
Yeah. Hello, Shilpa. This is Ashish Maluste, CFO of the company. So if you permit, I'll take this call, this question. So you're absolutely on bang on when you have analyzed the financial situation of the company, except just one small correction. The model is not fully asset light. Partly we can go asset light, but most of our things is where we invest into the capex that goes into the theater. But having said that, the fact is that we are sitting on 100 crore plus gross cash and about 50 odd crores of net cash, and this has been the situation for last 10 years except one quarter during COVID. And yes, philosophically, in fact, when we went public at that time also, we had said that whenever the company will not find a meaningful utilization opportunities of the accumulated cash, the same will be used to reward the shareholders. And in other words, what we meant was we will not get into any unrelated or a related expensive or risky kind of propositions like, say, production of movie, something like that. And we stood by what we had promised, and between 2016 to 2019, substantial amount of dividend was distributed, upward of 200 crores to the shareholders. And yes, at that point in time, certainly there was an even at that time there was an option of doing buyback. However, for the whatever reasons attributable to it, we thought it appropriate to reward the shareholders in the form of a cash, because probably we were freshly listed. Having said that, yes, there is an opportunity to do buyback, and buyback at the current valuation at which the company is would be a better proposition than distributing dividend. So, yes, you are right. The question is whether we are at that stage. in terms of cash availability, yes, but in terms of technicality, which means the P&L supporting buyback or distribution of dividend, we are not at that stage even today because of the accumulated losses that we had, which are slowly behind us now. But maybe the stage at which the company will be in a position to return the monies back to the shareholder in the form of dividend or a buyback would be sometime soon, not immediate, because last year we turned profitable meaningfully. This year we have continued in all the three quarters the PAT level profitability. So when this continues for some more period of time, yes, there will be a meaningful accumulation of cash, and at that point of time, buyback can certainly be considered, especially because the valuation parameters and the multiples are at a relatively lower level as compared to industry.
Yes, sir, I understand your point. Just one thing. So can we go for a buyback in a smaller amount, like 3, 4, 5 crore per quarter? That won't impact the cash also much along with the plans that the company has.
Yes, again, I'll say that yes, that can be one of the strategies and one of the ways forward. But all depends on whether your your financials allow you to reach that level. In my opinion, by year end, we would be. Then whether it should be one go, bigger chunk, distribution of dividend or buyback, or doing dividends in a shorter span or buybacks in a shorter span will be a tactical decisions which need to be taken by the board. But all I'm trying to tell you is that this company has always believed in returning the cash to the shareholders. It could be in the form of, it was in the form of dividend in the past, and I'm saying it is to the tune of 200 crore plus. That is the money that we have returned. What is the exact number? 255 crores were distributed in 4 years. And that is what we wanted to bring it to the shareholders and the investors and analysts notice, that this is the philosophy of the company. Unfortunately, the whole industry went through a very bad patch from 2020. Now, luckily, we are out of it meaningfully last 1.5 years. So, yes, once we are again back in that situation, we will take that call. But tactical calls, whether it should be in a tranches or at one go, whether it should be dividend or buyback, that would be driven by the board level discussion.
Okay, sir. Thank you. Just one suggestion. I think that dividend won't improve the EPS and ROE for the shareholders as much as buyback can do. So just one suggestion from my side.
I fully agree with you on this, more because the level of lower valuations that we currently have, considering the consistent performance that the company is giving.
Yes, sir. Thank you so much.
Thank you. The next question comes from the line of Vedant Bangar, an individual investor. Please go ahead with your question.
Good morning, sir. So actually, in the last Q2 con call, you had said that we shall
can
not...
Can you speak a little louder, please?
Yes, sir. Can you hear me now?
I would just request you to speak a little louder.
Yes, sir. Am I audible now?
Yeah, yeah. Please go ahead.
So in the Q2 con call, you had said that we shall not expect the same numbers in the Q3 as they were in the last Q3. As in December 2024 numbers shall not be compared to this, we shall not expect the numbers this quarter, because last year December quarter had a very massive release called Pushpa 2, which enhanced the numbers to a certain extent. So this quarter as well, there was this release on exactly the same day, 5th December. So we had the same number of days to cover those numbers in form of Dhurandhar. So the numbers didn't quite match the last year's quarter. So can I know the reason why? Because the quantum of the high grosser was almost the same this year as well. Would like your take on that, sir.
I appreciate your astute observation on this point, and also with reference to the last quarter, Q3 FY24. Only thing is, the couple of differences over here was that this year the Diwali releases didn't pan out. Normally the releases during Diwali time, they work and they give us much better returns. So that was one reason. Dhurandhar, yes, you are absolutely right. It did work very well. Only thing is, between Dhurandhar and Pushpa 2, the primary difference was that Dhurandhar was a single language film released only in Hindi language, whereas Pushpa 2 was a multilingual language which released in Hindi, Tamil, Telugu, Malayalam, or Kannada, all these languages it released in. So it had a much wider footprint, and that delivered the numbers, much higher numbers for Pushpa 2 than it could do only for Dhurandhar. So this is the two primary differences that we see.
Okay, so if I can add on to this, one thing which Siddharth would be able to better articulate, which I will leave it to him, is about the point that Dhurandhar, when it was released, it had a limited hype when you compare it with Pushpa 2, and most certainly Dhurandhar became a great hit once it was released, but the allocation of the advertisement resources that happened is based on a hype as perceived by the advertisers. So therefore, just to take a corollary, Pushpa 2 would have got a better advertiser's attention than Pushpa 1, and of course Pushpa 2 was considered to be one of the super hyped and super expected doing better movie. But so Pushpa 2 had a better outlook from advertiser's point of view versus Pushpa 1, and same would probably happen for Dhurandhar, which probably it would take up. But before that, quickly, second thing that has happened is the government and state and central government vertical that we have within the advertising, which used to be 100 crore plus till 2020, that had come down to the range of 30 crores last year, full year, and that continues to underperform. So on a quarter-on-quarter basis, the government segment has reduced by about 4 crores, if I'm correct. So that has been a major reason why during the quarter, the performance on the advertisement front looks challenging. And then this explanation about Dhurandhar, which probably Sid will be able to explain in more detail.
Is Siddharth. So as Ashish and Rajesh just mentioned, they are two different genre of movies. One is more national, another one limited to Hindi-speaking markets, so which provides lesser opportunity for advertisers to take advantage of. And second, Pushpa 2 was eagerly awaited for over a year, more than a year, and advertisers were, there was a lot of excitement pent up, which came out when the movie was released at the end of the year. So it worked on the hype of more than a year, whereas Dhurandhar, like any other blockbuster, anticipated blockbuster, carried the buzz was there in the market, which we took advantage, and the word of mouth spread, and it turned out to be the biggest blockbuster Hindi cinema has ever seen. I'm sure it will create a similar hype for Dhurandhar 2, which is due for release within this fiscal itself. So you can anticipate equal if not more response from advertisers in the month of April. In the month of March, mid March. And the results of that should show in the next quarter.
Okay, sir.
Yeah.
So one
I
more
hope
thing.
I answered your question. We all three.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Very, very elaborate. So one more thing I need to ask. Sir, our margins of the past 5 or 6 quarters have been a little erratic. I mean, they have swung from 22% to 12% to again 16%. So what's the normal trajectory of margins that we should expect in the future? Operating margins I'm talking about.
Okay, so when you look at operating margin and it moving erratically, the erratic movement would only and only because of the movement in advertisement revenue. And the reason for that is there is a sizable fixed cost associated with the advertisement revenue in our case, which is the sharing that we do with the theaters, which is called advertisement revenue share as I had in the books. Now that is annually it is in the range of about 75 crores, of which almost 80% is fixed. So what happens is when you have a Q3 of last year, my margin from advertisement revenue shoots up because this cost being fixed, more or less being in a near fixed scenario. But when that advertisement revenue on an annualized basis comes to a lower level, say against 160 crores annualized, it comes down to 100 crore annualized, then the margin contracts from 75 crores annualized to 25 crores annualized. So that would directly translate into, now this is one key margin, because the rest of our business is quite predictable. My both revenue streams from distributor fee revenue and my theatrical revenue is relatively predictable, and the expenses are also predictable. So there is a certainty to the kind of margins that we will draw from this segment. It's not a segment, but this section of my revenues. But the only differentiating factor is my ad revenue, how it pans out. And that exactly, now if you go back and try to correlate with the ad revenues, you would see a similar kind of a movement in my margins. One small addition, there would be a betterment in the margins when you see my sale of product revenue going up in a particular quarter, because that generally fetches me around 21 to 22% average margin.
Okay.
So these are the two factors. If you link it with the numbers that you analyze, you will probably get the answer. And if there's anything still outstanding, then we'll be happy if you show to discuss your question.
Okay, so one last question. So, in March 21, as in the year FY 22 and FY 21, we had accumulated losses of more than 200 crores, you know, if we combine both the years basically. So, so why are we paying taxes? I mean, we have accumulated losses of more than 200 crores in those 2 years, so shouldn't we negating the tax rate till the time 200 crores is compensated?
So, thank you. Good question. Many investors may have this point, but the answer lies in accounting principles. So, what you see as a tax expense is not a tax payout.
Okay.
So, there is a concept of deferred tax sitting in the balance sheet. So, basically, the books of accounts say that whether you have profit or no or loss, that period's profit or loss must represent a true picture. And therefore, when we were incurring losses, you would see that if you open those numbers now, the loss before tax and loss after tax, you will find the loss after tax being lower than loss before tax. Obviously, nobody is paying me taxes, but still, why my loss before after tax lower is we create fictitious assets called deferred tax asset in the books, which primarily says that whenever in future you will make the profit, you will reduce this deferred tax asset fictitious, and in that period, though you don't have to pay tax, in the books of accounts you will show that there is a tax payment. This is an accounting principle. So therefore, when you see in the current period there is any tax hit in the books, that doesn't mean that my tax hit translates into cash outflow. What it means is correspondingly my deferred tax asset sitting in my balance sheet will go down. And now if you see my, of course for Q3 you may not be able to see, but Q2 if you see the balance sheet is reported, even year-end balance sheet would be reported, you will see the deferred tax asset going down. Still, since we are on this point, still there could be one question, then why there is an outflow in cash flow for tax? That is because purely because there are TDSs. So even though I am not liable to pay any tax, when I render a service, the service recipient is supposed to deduct tax as per the provisions of Income Tax Act. So, although whether I am making profit or no, he is supposed to deduct tax. We obtain a lower deduction certificate, so the tax deduction in many cases goes down. But that amount gets treated as TDS paid by us. But that entirely comes as a refund from government. So, long story short, till the time I am recovering my losses of those 2 years, I am not required to make any payment of taxes in cash flow, but in books of accounts, in that period, my PBT or loss before tax was reduced artificially. Deferred tax asset was created, and that gets written back as I start making profit. So this is simply accounting thing. We don't pay any taxes from cash.
Okay. Okay. Thanks a lot, sir. I wish you a great year ahead, and you've been great help. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Yeah, the next question from the line of Mr. Sagar, an individual investor. Please go ahead with your question.
Hello. Hi, sir. I'm audible. Hello.
Yeah, we can hear you.
Hello.
Yes, yeah, we can hear you.
Yes, sir. We're really happy how we have grown, the company is turning around.
Sorry, sir, your voice is cracking a little bit. I think your voice is cracking, so you're audible, but we lose you in between.
Okay.
Can you continue? Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. So, am I audible now? Hello.
As of now, you are.
Yeah. Sir, you know, we if you want to know that how the advertising revenue comes from any segment or out segment, so can you share that what percentage of the advertising revenue comes from movies and out movies on an annual basis?
I'm really sorry, we are not able to hear you in a clearer signal patch, because few words here and there we can hear, but not the entire sentence.
Mr. Sagar, there is
an echo
from your line as well.
Okay, wait. Hello, I'm audible now?
Yes, now you are.
Hello. Sir, my question was, so I wanted to know, on an annual basis, so your advertisement revenue, how much comes from Hindi movies and how much comes from, you know, other regional language?
So, this is Siddharth. We try to monetize not films per se, but screens. So there may be a screen where multiple movies run, some of different languages. So when the proposition is offered to an advertiser, it is to advertise on a screen for a specific week, and by default the leading movie in that on that screen would yield the maximum amount of eyeballs for an advertiser. It depends from year to year what is the pipeline of content, so depending upon what genre, what language is performing, this ratio changes. However, since our screens are split between Hindi market and southern markets, we can definitely provide you insights into what is the kind of revenue that the screens down south, five states of south, yield to us, and what is the amount of revenue the balance set of screens yield to us. But it will be difficult and unfair to share that whatever comes on revenue is burnt or billed to an advertiser for Hindi markets is only for Hindi content. It is a result of mixed content that is running on those screens. Similarly for screens down south. I won't have the number right now off the cuff,
sure,
to share with you what's the kind of revenue southern screens yield to us and the Hindi markets screens yield to us, but we can definitely share the same with you. Right?
So, and sir, how much screen, like 3? Yeah, so 3,700, how much of the screen is available, present in Hindi market and how much into south?
So some 1,590 screens are in the southern market, five states of south, and balance screens would be in the Hindi-speaking market.
And sir, you know, so I wanted to understand, you know, how many advertisers you have currently, and also, you know, how sticky the business are. So if, let's suppose, an advertiser comes from, you know, time to time, or he goes and off through seasons or through years. So can you share, like, what is the stickiness of advertisers, and so how many advertisers that you have, and, you know, what kind of growth you are seeing in advertisers?
So there are two sets of advertisers. One is an advertiser who consistently uses cinema as an advertising strategy and is more or less present or active on the cinema network that is relevant to his markets around the year or through his season, right? And there are other advertisers who only advertise on cinema on peak impact or, you know, tentpole opportunities or tentpole movies, right? So these are the two different set of advertisers. Both have a different strategy to take advantage of cinema as a medium. You know, these are depending upon the buzz around the content. The tactical advertisers advertise on cinema. They vanish when there is buzz reduces. However, mature advertisers who look at cinema as a medium to be consistently used through the season or through the year, they are actively present over a long period of time. You know, I can say post COVID, the tactical advertisers came back faster because it doesn't take long to build conviction around big blockbusters. But the consistent advertisers or advertisers who consistently advertise on cinema screens took time to come on board. But this has been a year where these advertisers have embraced cinema. They have realized that cinema has bounced back off and on, the big hits will come, and over a period of time, the audiences will even out. So they have come back, but the impact, the advertisers who take advantage of the impact properties, tentpole hits, they embrace cinema only when the big ones come on the cinema screens. So that is dependent upon flow of content. So I hope that gives a clear picture of what has happened, what is going to happen in the future. Yeah.
Sir, any long-term agreements that you have with your advertisers, or it just, you know, changes season by season? Like?
So, yes, like I said, two type of advertisers. One, consistent advertisers. So these are the guys who do either annual deals or season-specific deals. Supposing there's a Hauderi client who's active only for 4 months, he will do a four-month deal. There are other advertisers who may want to, who advertise around the year. They do year-long deals, but only for screens which are relevant. Supposing somebody, a brand is active only in Bengal, he'll only do for Bengal screens. So they are the guys who do annual deals or long-term deals. And the others, they come on content, and they pay basis the pricing that exists on that specific week. So yes, we have long-term advertisers and just simple advertisers who take advantage of specific release or specific movie.
Yeah, and sir, the lady that asked the first question about the buyback. So, I mean, your company looks interesting, and next year is kind of going to be big because Dhurandhar 2 is lined up then. And both the Two Khans and Ramayana movie, a lot of good movies are coming next year. So, and your stock is trading below book value. So just one suggestion, as I, you know, if you have the money, you can do buyback, because if, you know, your financials come next year good, then the stock will already run, and, you know, then your stock will become costly for you to buy back the. So it's cheaper now, but the future really looks interesting. And yeah, that's it from my end. Thank you so much, sir.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you have a question, please press star and one on a telephone keypad. Next question comes from the line of Ashish Bhuj, an individual investor. Please go ahead.
Hi sir, I am an individual investor. I just wanted to know a couple of things. One is the slippage on the margin front on Q1Q basis. In spite of higher ad revenues, our margins have shrunk on Q1Q basis. Secondly, I just want to have a color on the non-advertising revenue as to what are the factors impacting those.
Can you're losing your voice in between. Can you repeat the first question? I understood to be why the margin in Q3 is lower
than Q2 of 25, 26.
Q2 of current year.
Yeah, current year.
Yeah, okay. And the second question?
I just want to have a color on the product and non-ad revenues as to what are the major factors impacting that.
Okay, so let me take the first question first. And your first question is about sequentially why your margin is appearing to be going down.
Yeah, in spite of higher ad revenues.
Correct. So answer to that, so well, from 19%, it seems that it has gone down to 16%, 15.9%. And the simple answer to that is, I mean, mathematically, three reasons which I can quickly back up the envelope tell you. One is that there is slight reduction in ad revenue. And my increase in ad revenue as well as decrease in ad revenue impacts the EBITDA as well as PBT margins to the tune of 80% of reduction or increase. Because as I had explained in one of my previous call missions, that my fixed cost is significant of sharing. So if I earn 100 more rupee, then a major portion of the sharing is already fixed. So the incremental 100 rupee may contribute around 70 to 75 rupee as margin. The same happens when it is reversed. When my ad revenue reduces, it will bring the profitability down by almost 70-75%. And therefore, on quarter-on-quarter basis, when there is a slight reduction in ad revenue, that has translated to the reduction in the absolute margin. And that absolute margin in turn leads to reduction in the margin leads to the reduction in the proportionate margin. So therefore, out of 19 to 16, one component pertains to the fact that the sales, the advertisement sales itself has come down by some portion. The second reason is that the sharing which is again on a quarter-on-quarter basis, it gets neutralized with the ongoing discussions with certain of the bigger chains, can move the quarterly hit by some basis points. So in this quarter, there is some amount of increase which in the sharing versus the previous quarter. And therefore, on a net level, though the ad revenue is having a lower reduction, the net advertisement revenue will see a higher reduction. And that is the second element that you see. And the third element, which is not directly seen in the numbers, is my profitability margin from international business. So if my international business has contributed slightly better in Q2 versus Q3, that will push the margin higher. So while I have not built that bridge straight away for you, but offhand I know that these are the three key reasons why the margins would come down from 19% to 16%, plus some amount of increase in provisioning that we have done on a conservative basis towards certain expenses in Q3 over Q2, but that is not a significant amount. So these are the three or four key items why you see the margin difference. The advertisement part is more important to note, that any increase will disproportionately contribute to the margins and vice versa.
Thanks. And for advertisement revenue, how is the revenue sharing done with the exhibitor? Is it on variable basis or minimum commitment basis?
Yeah, so it's a minimum commitment, but the way it goes is when we sign up a theater, we provide the entire, mostly as a part of our business proposition, we provide an entire infrastructure and invest in the infrastructure. This is one category of a deal. In that case, there is a fixed minimum guarantee that we commit to him, which is nearly equal to the rental that we charge to him. So the theater in turn gets those investments at either near zero rental,
zero cost,
or marginal rental, depending upon what kind of equipment he has bought. But that component of minimum guarantee will always be compared in the books versus my books, my advertisement revenue. So this is one category. There is also a second category where if the investment is not done by us, then there will be a higher minimum guarantee plus sharing that we have to do. And there could be certain theaters, which is a small in proportion, where we sign up for no minimum guarantee, but 25% of the net advertisement revenue being shared with them. So it's a composition of 7-8 different key categories, but I have explained you 3 key categories out of them.
Thank you. Thanks, sir.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you have a question, please press star and 1 on a telephone keypad. Next, we have a follow-up question from Mr. Sagar, an individual investor. Please go ahead.
Hello. Yeah. So, sir, I was going through your numbers and I just wanted... Hello.
Yeah.
Hello. Yeah, I'm audible, right?
Please continue. Yes.
Yeah. So, I just wanted to understand, I was going with your numbers and I just wanted to understand the long-term growth of UFO movies. So... as I said, you know, the corporates, like, can you tell me before COVID and after COVID, how many corporate clients that you have? Is there a growth in that? And, you know, how do you see yourself into 5 years down the line? Are you focusing on the local shops advertising on, and you know, on the screens, or you're targeting the multinationals on and long-term agreements with corporates? So just wanted to understand, like, a five-year horizon.
Yeah, so I think very interesting observation by you, and cinema being very hyper-local, relevant to hyper-local advertising, you know, that it's very relevant, hence more than apt place to advertise for local advertisers. So that's an area of growth, not only for us, but for all cinema chains. So the challenge has been get to these advertisers and create a channel to actually source these advertisers from these local stores which are in the catchment area of a specific screen. We set up a few years back, we had set up a DSA network across the country to source slide advertising, which is basically because the local advertisers didn't have audio visuals to advertise on a cinema screen. So we had set up a DSA network and a digital platform to schedule advertising on the cinema screen. So where a DSA could source a slide from a mom and pop store around a cinema screen and through an app schedule a campaign on a UFO screen. But it was limited to slide only because the retailers didn't have AVs. However, the market has matured from then to now, where local advertisers also have been using audio-video, tools to where they use it on digital media. So now the local advertisers also have audio-video to actually run on a medium like cinema. So we are getting back to the same old channel using our very old Frames platform to garner advertising from local catchment retailers. So that is a piece that we are slowly building around key cinema properties across the country. So these are initial days. I think if we take a 5-year look, I think it should mature into a very substantial revenue, you know, which will provide us a decent amount of growth and a very stable growth, because this it's a relevant area to advertise for a local retailer. And, you know, this will be far more consistent than a corporate advertising on a cinema screen. We understand this fitment between our screens and local retailers. We were trying to bridge the gap that existed between how to source these advertisements and trying to overcome the challenge of retailers having a AV media, AV, you know, to run on a cinema screen. Thankfully, digital has helped us, where retailers now have a AV medium, and our endeavor to actually set up a channel to, you know, deliver it on our cinema screen. The work is in progress. In a 5-year period, I think your company should be in a position to contribute substantial on this front. I can't give numbers, guidance on it, but a large part of our growth should come from local advertising.
Okay, great. And I hope, sir,
this answers the question.
Yeah, I understand. I mean, the opportunity looks good, because I, you know, I look around and there are billboards and all, and, you know, people have gone truly digital. So I really think that it's a big opportunity. So second question was, so there are almost 9,000-10,000 screens in cinema screens, if I'm not wrong. And I think 3,000-4,000 is then PVR. So those remaining 5,000 are, who are the competitors, and, you know, are this 5,000 are also, are you looking to expand new screens too? And there is one more competition that has recently listed on the market, like Complex. So are you also, they are also one of your screens?
Yeah, so we constantly strive to add to our advertising screen network. As you have seen, we just added the Mirage screen network. That is currently 230 screens, and it's poised to expand to another by another 75 screens. And as also would like to point out that we have been consistently improving the product mix by increasing the number of multiplex screens, which you know, gather more attention from the advertisers. So that is there. And as you mentioned, Complex, yes, Complex, we have some of the screens with us and some of the screens are with another network, which had already done. So it's an ongoing process. As the screens open up, we consistently try to engage with them and bring them on board with us for advertising purposes.
Yeah, and so the last question. So before COVID and after, so you are sharing like 25% revenue with the screen guys, right? So are there any chances that this ratio of them, like the revenue sharing, can fluctuate, and, you know, their share of revenue can increase? And what was before COVID and after COVID, like the revenue sharing?
So revenue sharing percentages before COVID were in the range of 29, 31, 32 in 2017, 2018, 2019, but during this time my advertisement revenue was quite sizable. Old advertisement revenue 17 was about 180, 18 was 200, and 18, 19, 213, and 237. So about, when we were at a level of 200 crore of advertisement revenue, my sharing percentage was around 30, 29, 31, and 32. So the same equation which I was trying to explain you some time back, currently you are seeing in FY25, my sharing percentage was 60.83, and in the current period, my sharing percentage would have
again come down in the same range. In Q3 it is 59, but in Q1 it was 67. So what is happening now is because my ad revenue has come down substantially from 200 crores level to a level of 120 crore, my sharing percentages have gone up because I have a significant fixed component. Having said that, the basic percentage itself have moved and it will move. To answer your question whether a ongoing basis the sharing percentage that we have agreed or a minimum guarantee amount that we have agreed would remain same or no, the answer to that is as the business grows, obviously the theaters rightfully would have an expectation of a slightly higher share, and those are negotiated and paid. So yes, when somebody is looking at the percentages may look going up, but at the same time, the absolute net margin that is generated has also gone up in that scenario. So, two parts to the answer. One, the percentage appears to be going, doubling post-COVID, and that is because the revenues have halved. At the same time, a portion of this increase is also attributable to the fact that the key chains who are doing slightly better over a period of time in terms of ad revenue contribution rightfully ask for a slightly higher share when the negotiations are there at the time of renewal. So this is how it is. Ongoing basis also it would move, but that movement would be more in line with the growth in the absolute advertisement revenue that the company sees.
And sir, so regarding your capital expenditure, so just may I know where your CapEx goes? I think your CapEx goes into renewal, into newer equipment and all. So what will be the CapEx this year and maybe even the next year you expect?
So we had given a guidance in the very beginning that during the year our CapEx would be in the range of 40-45 crore. And yeah. Last quarter also we had indicated that we are on the budgeted track. And this CapEx is something which is in our hands, so to some extent. And therefore, if we see a far too better performance, then we can become aggressive if we have to replace certain of our equipment. As you must have noticed that we have 3,000 plus theaters. And a right. major chunk of that is where we have our own investment in projectors, servers, and the ancillary equipment. And those need, you know, to be upgraded or replaced in a cycle, but that cycle is something which is in our control depending on how the profitability is. But having said that, a minimum level 40-45 crores of capex is necessary to maintain the network that we have.
Thank you. That was the last question for the day. Now I hand over the floor to Mr. Rajesh Mishra for closing comments.
Thank you all for joining today's call. We value your time and continued engagement with our business. Our team remains available for any further queries or clarification. We appreciate the support and look forward to updating you again next quarter. Thank you very much, everyone.
Thank you, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes the conference call for today. Thank you for your participation. You may disconnect your lines now. Thank you and have a good day.
Thank you.